Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And you can give us a call, 208-991-4783. Well, today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thank you so much for your support. Well, now, here's today's episode of Dragnet. This one is called The Big Genius. Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a juvenile detail. A woman reports that a teenage boy has been stealing food from her home. She says she's seen him several times. Your job? Check it out.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law to an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, April 12th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of juvenile detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Powers. My name's Frank. I was on my way into the office, and it was 7:57 a.m. when I got to the second floor of Georgia Street Juvenile Squadron.
Simple phone call. He was arrested at 1 o'clock this morning.
That's right.
I didn't hear about him until after 4. Now, why weren't we contacted immediately? My wife is half out of it.
We're sorry about that. Oh, my boy. Mr. Neff, this is my partner, Sergeant Friday.
How are you?
This is Vincent Neff's father.
You in on this thing too, Friday?
That's right.
Both of you to arrest a 15-year-old boy, right?
We made the arrest together. Why?
I'd be ashamed of you.
Is this what seems to be the trouble, Mr. Neff?
My boy's in jail. He's been there all night.
Yes, sir.
I found out about it a couple of hours ago. I want to know why I wasn't called at once.
Well, so we called you as soon as we could. Your son wasn't carrying any identification. He refused to answer our questions. We had no way of knowing who to contact.
He's scared, that's all. You can't blame him for that. How'd you get his name if he wouldn't tell you? He did out of it?
The other boy we picked up decided to cooperate with
him. Yes, you shift some of the blame. My son's done anything at all, and he shouldn't. You can be certain that Leonard could put him up to it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even know what this is all about.
You talked to him, have you?
Certainly. He's a mistake, the whole thing.
Sure.
Oh, I suppose the police don't make mistakes.
We make them.
I'll show you, though. You feel the beauty is done.
It doesn't look that way, Doctor.
Well, don't tell me how it looks. I know my son. I know when he's telling the truth. He says this is a mistake, and I believe it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make any wild threats or try to go over your head. I want that boy released, and I want him released at once.
Sorry, sir, we can't do that.
I'm being just as patient as I can.
Mr. Neff, we filed a petition on this, son. There'll be a pre-detention hearing in juvenile court as soon as possible. What will decide what happens? It's out of our hands now.
It wasn't out of your hands last night when you arrested him.
That was our job.
Your job is to protect people's rights. You're supposed to be cops, not police.
Take it easy, Mr. Neff.
There's plenty of crime in this town and plenty of criminals. Robbery, killings, all that. Only trouble is they never get solved. Police force is too busy manhandling youngsters and chasing bums out of freight yards.
All right, Mr. Neff.
Too busy or too scared. You're afraid to tackle the real gangster. He might get hurt. You'd rather pick on a teenage kid who can't fight back. Cowards, that's what you really are. You're cowards, not policemen.
Let me ask you something, Ned. Suppose a couple of guys driving to a filling station. One of them cracks the owner over the head with a tire iron while the other one cleans up a cash register. You think we ought to forget about it or go after it?
I'm not interested in hypothetical cases. I'm talking about my son.
So am I.
What do you mean?
You said you spoke to the boy. Didn't he tell you why he's here?
He said he didn't know. Is that what it is? You think he's mixed up in a filling station robbery? Is that where you're holding him?
Maybe you better ask him again.
I'm asking you.
Yes, that's it.
You'd better be able to prove it. Believe me, you'd just better be able to prove it.
A woman across the street from the station saw two boys drive away. She got the license.
Vince doesn't have a car.
It was young Lemish, Jamaica. Your son was still with it when we made the arrest.
That doesn't prove anything. That doesn't prove they were together at the filling station. It was some other boy, not Vince.
That's what your son says, too.
Well, then why don't you believe
him? Lemish gave us a different story.
Well, what do you expect? He doesn't want to take all the blame. He's in a jam and he wants some company.
The woman across the street assured there were two boys, Mr. Neff.
That doesn't make one of them my Vince. Does she say it was Vince? Is she willing to swear to it?
No, sir.
What about the owner of the station? Has he identified my son?
He can't identify anybody. He's still unconscious.
I'm sorry for him, of course, but you haven't got any right to blame him. And you haven't got any evidence against him, either.
We got the tire iron that was used in the slugging, yeah.
Well, what about it?
We had it checked by Lake and Trent.
Oh?
They found it, Seth.
They can't be Vince's fingerprints. They can't be.
I'm sure they are.
No, you're wrong. You can stay.
That's the sign.
Why would Vince do a thing like this? There's no reason. He's had everything. Everything you could give him. Even if he was poor, if he didn't get an allowance every week. There's no reason.
I'm sure I'll get some time with
him. Well, I'm sorry. Sorry for the rough one. I better get on home now. No. I want to know if he's all right. Oh, one thing,
Jesse.
If he's really good with her, I'm glad you caught him, by the way, right after it happened. I'm just kidding.
Sir?
But it didn't happen to him.
That's one of those puzzles with numbers that move around trying to line up.
Kid's a lot of them, I
always taught him how to work it. Real easy, Joe. Yeah, see? Got them all in order. One. Come on, listen.
Okay.
I just had it. That's why I was speaking to him. No? Give me a minute, can't you, Joe? You got two numbers in the wrong place.
Look, Joe, I can't work the puzzle when you're watching them.
I got it. Juvenile price. Yes, sir. Let's see. Well, do you know the boy? Can you give me your address, please? All right. I have it. What? Yes, ma'am, we would. Will you be home? All right. Thank you very much. Lady up in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
Some youngster's been stealing groceries out of her garage.
You know who it is?
Got a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
She almost caught him. Frank and I left the office and drove out to a hillside address on Edgewood Drive, 2 miles north of Hollywood Boulevard. It's 9:17 a.m. when we got there.
There isn't too much to tell. At least 10 days ago, I started listening things in the garage here. Canned goods. I keep an extra supply of them shelves over there in the corner. It wasn't much gone. Just a couple of items now and then. First, I wasn't even certain. I thought maybe I'd used them up myself and forgot about them.
Mm-hmm.
Then this morning, I saw him. It was right after Clarence went to
work. Well, about what time would that be?
7 a.m. That's when he leaves. No later than 5 after.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing up the breakfast dishes, and I heard somebody fussing around the garage. By the time I got to the back door, he was sneaking off across the yard. I gave a shout and started after him.
What happened then?
I guess Magellan kind of took him by surprise. Anyway, he turned around and dropped the stuff he was holding. He didn't wait to pick it up, though. Started off as fast as his legs would carry him. He had it up the hill there. That was the last I saw of him.
Now, just what was it he dropped him?
A couple of cans and my groceries and a big paper bag. That's it, there on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I looked inside. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I thought it might be some arm of cannabis.
It's all right. What do you got, Joe? Books.
Huh?
Books here.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretical physics, principles of dynamics, and theories of molecular structure.
I can make head and tail of them myself. Must be something he's studying.
Yes, sir.
His name is?
No. Better off in the Hollywood library.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell us what he looked like, Miss Roman?
Yes, I guess so. First off, I'd say he looks like books.
Okay.
You know, the study in touch. Sort of tan and thin.
Mm-hmm.
Blondish hair. Light complexion.
About how tall?
5'6" or 7". Might look taller than he really is on account of being so thin.
Mm-hmm. About how old would he say he
was? 15, 16, somewhere in there, just a youngster.
Do you know his clothes?
I don't think it's pretty worn. And sweater.
What about the pants?
The sweater was blue, pants were too faded to sell. Now, I want you to understand one thing. I'm not real upset about him taking our leave. If he needs it, then. It seems to me there ought to be a better way of going about it. Nobody has to see that.
Is today the first time you ever saw us going with Roman?
Oh, no. I've seen him a couple of times before. On a few mornings, he walked past the house on his way down the hill. At evening, I saw him heading back up. Of course, I didn't connect him with my missing groceries then.
Oh, we'll have a look around. He just lives up on the hill, didn't he?
Oh, no, Mr. Fudd. He doesn't live up there. Nobody does. Edgewood Drive lives out 100 yards beyond us. He's on the next day. We're the last house.
a.m. Frank and I left Mrs. Roman. We drove up to the end of Edgewood Drive and we got out of the car.
Well, she's right, Joe.
What's that?
No place for anybody to live around here. It's way out in the country.
No. Frank?
Huh?
Over there, halfway up on the slope.
What?
See? Right behind that tree?
Oh, yeah.
What's it look like to you?
I don't know. That's where you set up housekeeping. What are you talking about, Joe?
Didn't you ever try when you were a kid?
Try what?
Hiding out in a cave. We climbed up the side of the hill. About 200 yards east of the road, we came to a small hole. Behind this opening was a shallow, natural cave. Frank and I crawled inside. The cave was about 8 feet long and 4 feet wide. The boy we were looking for was not there, but there was plenty of evidence that this was where he'd been living. A sleeping bag was rolled up in one corner. Beside it was a small supply of canned food. We found 10 or 12 notebooks filled with handwritten mathematical equations and some 50 textbooks on advanced physics or higher mathematics.
Sure believes in making use of the public library.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? About every branch in town.
Well, I suppose there were things to be reading.
Looks like they aren't all library books.
What do you got, Jeff?
Stuff here with book plates.
Huh?
Owner's name in them. Book plates and three of the texts indicated that they were owned by a person named Carl Winderman. All the other volumes were the property of various Los Angeles libraries. We contacted the office and made arrangements for another team of juvenile officers to stake out on the cave. On our way downtown, we stopped off at the Hollywood Library. We said the librarian several volumes which belonged to that branch. Her records indicated that the books had not been checked out. She had no idea who had taken them and when. 11:13 a.m. We put out a local with a boy's description and we checked it using purchase. As far as we could tell, he had not been reported missing. 11:46 a.m. Frank and I made several calls to Frank's library. They all said that the books in question had been removed from their shelves without authorization. We checked the phone directory for the name Carl Winderman. 12:06 p.m. we reached him at his office at Bradfield University.
That's nice. Well, I'd be up to you for any time today. I'm fine with that.
Yes, sir.
Thanks very much. My guy, Joe. How was the visit?
You know anything that might help him?
Yeah, he knows the boy.
p.m. Frank and I drove out to the Bradfield campus. We met with Dr. Carl Winderman in his office on the second floor of the science building.
Yes, I've talked to the boy several times.
Mm-hmm. You know he had these books of yours?
Of course, I loaned them to him.
Awesome. How'd you happen to meet him, Doctor?
He was here at the university.
Yes, sir.
He came to see me. He had read some articles of mine which we discussed.
Okay.
It was not presumptuous. He has a brilliant mind. Extraordinary.
I see.
And he also wished to inquire about enrolling. He asked about a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to discourage him for a year or so at least. He's very young.
Did he say how old he was?
18, that is what he told me. I'm afraid it was not the truth.
About how old would you say he is?
Perhaps 50. Do you know his name, sir?
Peter.
Glasser?
I suppose he told me, but I'm afraid I do not remember. This is an absent-minded professor.
What about his family? Did he mention?
No. I imagine they are not well-to-do. The lady was glass and inquiry about a scholarship.
Mm-hmm. Did he say where he lived?
In Los Angeles, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I think he did mention something about recently coming to California.
Mm-hmm.
For one of the eastern states, Pennsylvania, perhaps.
You wouldn't know which town, would
you? No, answer.
Is there anything else you can tell us about him, Dr. Winterman?
Well, I would say he is a happy man.
You say he's unhappy?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Lonely, aloof. It must be very difficult for him. Other people. The children his age, he would be unable to talk to them. They would have nothing in common, even adults. A brilliant mind does not necessarily make for a well-adjusted person, especially in one so young.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Winterman. Please, one of our cards. You should hear from him again. Would you get in touch with us, please?
Yes, of course. If there's anything I can do for Peter...
Very kind of you.
Is he in some kind of trouble?
Well, we don't know yet, sir.
I did not mean to spoil. Forgive
me. Well, the fact is, he's been borrowing some books that don't belong to him.
Books?
Yes, sir. Some libraries around town.
Do you want to read? Do you want to learn? Is that such a serious crime? It does not seem like one to me. Mm-hmm. Is it all he's done?
Well, he's taken some other things, too. Food, canned goods.
Yes, of course, I should have known. When he was here, I should have known.
Thank you, Tom.
But it has been so long since I've seen one.
What's that, sir?
A boy who was hungry.
Frank and I went back to the office. The officers on stakeout reported that the boy had not returned to the cave. The stakeout was continued. 7:48 p.m.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking, George. Not losing my pocket.
Did you see? Did you get him an order yet?
I wasn't trying, Joe. I told you, I didn't even know I was fooling you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I wasn't trying.
Yes. Juvenile Friday.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Where about? Okay. We'll be right over. Thank you. Kid walked into a grocery store, walked out without paying for his groceries.
Sound like our boy?
Store's on the corner of Green Street and Edgewood. Frank and I drove out to the Huggins grocery store on the corner of Green and Edgewood. 8:17 p.m. We pulled up and went inside.
I was waiting on another customer. I didn't pay much attention to him. Next thing I knew, he was sneaking out the door. Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
We're police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name is Friday.
You can send him? I'm Davis, how are you?
Get a description here.
Yeah, my partner's out looking around. I'll give him a hand.
Say, will you take care of the report?
Yeah, we will.
Thanks. Now, this ain't no big robbery or anything like that. He's just a kid, you understand?
Yes, he did. Tell us what he looked like. Went to the
Huggins. Andy Huggins. He seemed to sign on the end.
That's right.
Well, like I said, he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He made it about halfway.
How's that?
Halfway in his teens, you know, about 15, 16.
Right.
White hair, thin and a rail.
How was he dressed, sir?
Pants, better.
Okay.
Just what do you take from your store, Mr. Huggins?
Well, I couldn't say for certain. I wouldn't have known he took anything if it hadn't dropped out from under his sweater when he was sneaking out the door.
Yeah.
And a corned beef. That's the bargain sells.
Mm-hmm. Did you see which way he went?
Out the door, up the street. Told the other policemen, I guess they were after him. I don't know whether I done right or not.
How then?
In the report, I expect it seems like a lot of fuss about a few glaciers.
Yes, sir.
Trouble that is, you let one of them get away with something like this, and you get around. Next thing you know, the door's full of them. The kids try to see you blind.
Yes, sir.
There's a plague of locals.
Sergeant?
Yeah, David.
Out in the car?
What?
We got it.
Patrol car officers had found the boy hiding in an alley a few blocks west of the grocery store. We transferred him to our vehicle and drove him down to Georgia Street. 9:46 p.m., we took him up to the interrogation room for questioning.
Sit down, sir.
All right, now you want to tell us about it?
About what? Well, let's start with your name.
Well.
Paul.
Paul what?
Jones.
You sure about that, honey?
I don't know my own name.
Yeah, he shouldn't.
Where do you live, Paul?
Mm-hmm. What are you doing in L.A.?
Looking around, that's all.
What's your address, huh?
Huh?
In San Diego, what's your address?
I don't know.
You know your name, but you don't know where you live.
Only moved to California a few weeks ago.
You live with your folks?
Sure.
They have a telephone?
Uh-huh.
What's father's name?
Bill. Bill Jones.
How long have you been in Los Angeles, son?
Just today.
Just today?
He packed in this morning.
Ever hear of a man named Carl Winderman?
You see?
Now look, Keith, you're not doing yourself any good, are you? You know what I said?
My name's Paul.
Why'd you steal that stuff from the grocery store?
I don't know.
What kind of an answer? You're in trouble, Pete. Serious trouble.
Am?
All right. You won't tell us, we'll tell you. You didn't come to Los Angeles today. You've been here for a couple of weeks. You've been living in a cave up in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah?
And this grocery store tonight isn't the first time you've gotten out of line.
Why'd you take all those books, then?
What books?
You sure you don't know these college professors really know?
Huh?
Like that Dr. Winderman? Says you're a smart kid. You're a real good head on your shoulders. I think that's a great reason.
What you know about it?
Yeah.
He's so far ahead of you guys.
Something you heard of him. All right, now, Pete, let's quit fooling around. Let's have it straight. All of it.
What do you want?
Your name isn't Paul Jones. Now, what is it?
Silas.
Pete Silas?
Yeah.
Where's your home?
You found it.
I didn't mean that cave, your real home.
I don't know. I used to live with my sis back in Philly.
What happened?
You got married, Julio.
What about your folks?
They're dead. What did you do?
Hmm?
That's it.
It's just a puzzle.
Huh.
You're supposed to line up the numbers. 1 through 15.
Yeah?
There. You want to try it?
Is that all?
Hmm?
You line them up?
Sure.
Now what?
Oh, I said I guess.
Oh.
Why did my cell phone
be? I wanted to go to college. Maybe I could study physics.
You study high school?
No, not the history neither.
What do you mean?
Science and math, I finished them a couple of years ago when I was a kid.
Just how old are you?
16 almost.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be harder if you didn't look at it.
Huh?
That's fun.
Yeah?
You know, let the guy see it first so he knows just where the numbers are.
Oh.
And make him work it with his hands behind his back. Remember me.
Huh.
You harder than that.
Yeah.
I'll show you. Go ahead, mix him up.
Okay. I thought you were going to memorize it first.
I did. Take a look. I get him right?
Yeah.
It's hard that way, though.
All right, now let's go back to it.
Hmm?
Why'd you take all those books?
I wanted to study them. I was going to return them when I was through. I couldn't get a library card. I thought a real trip.
What about the candy that you've been stealing?
It wasn't much. It's enough to eat. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to me now?
Well, that's not up to us.
Huh?
What do you think that happened?
I don't know. I don't see why I did anything so wrong.
You don't, huh?
Well, did I?
You stole books, you stole food. It caused us a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Well, you're the whiz at math, aren't you?
Huh?
You add it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you've just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On April 16th, a hearing was held in juvenile court for the state of California in and for the county of Los Angeles. Peter Ellis Siler was made a ward of the juvenile court and was placed in a foster home. Through the efforts of Dr. Carl Winderman, he was permitted to enroll in Bradfield University as a special student in the field of higher mathematics and physics.
You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb, a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Welcome back. Well, I have to say, first of all, this episode evoked a couple of programs from the 1970s. One from Adam 12, and the other one, Dragnet. Season 2 episode of Dragnet, The Cave, involved a boy storing things in a cave. And, of course, there was a Season 4 episode of Dragnet called Juvenile Genius, where a juvenile was, a very intelligent juvenile was masterminding a series of crimes. I don't think this episode had quite the emotional oomph on that one. In fact, when I got to the end of the program, I found myself a little bit disturbed, because while this boy had a, you know, extremely well-developed intellect, he didn't seem to have any sense of right and wrong. I get that he was hungry, and that's why he stole. And that he only wanted to learn, that's why he took the library books. But you have no sense that he thinks that there was anything at all that was wrong. Not, I know this was wrong, but this was the situation I found myself in. Just, I don't see that I did anything wrong. So it makes you wonder, how exactly is this genius gift going to work out? And is merely getting him education going to be a solution if there's no sense of right and wrong? One thing I will say was a very nice bonus in this particular episode is I actually love that first scene with the father just really getting upset at Friday and Smith. I was totally buying into that scene. The way it was told, it sounded absolutely like the type of things that police officers hear, the type of things that parents say. They just did a great job bringing that scene to life. Well, we didn't have any additional comments from listeners, so that'll actually take care of us for today. Join us next week for another episode of Dragnet. In the meantime, follow us over on Twitter at Radio Detectives. Send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Andrew Rhines provides our opening theme music. You can vote for his podcast, The Old Time Radio Westerns, at podcastawards.com. And also follow his podcast at otrwesterns.com. Ken Curlin provides the opening theme music, kencurlin.com. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.